This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba through the hour, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call. 1-800-462-7413. Along with your calls, always some interesting research. What this time, Zorba?
Yes, the new trend in sports events, all-you-can-eat food that comes with your seat.
All-to-eat food at the game.
That's right. And so, what does that mean?
What could be better than that? What could be the downside of that?
What could be the downside of that? No downside at all. And seasonal allergies, do they also spark depression and fatigue and other problems? We'll talk about the effects of seasonal allergies and maybe the seasonal allergy pills we take.
And a good recipe?
Citrus chicken with spinach. It's delish.
This one from a listener in Pewaukee, Wisconsin. And, of course, we have our medical myth buster for you later on. So stick around here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Zorba, let's take a call. A listener with us now in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi, how you doing today?
Fine. How can we help?
I thought I heard or read somewhere recently that the prolonged use of statin drugs has an effect on short-term memory. And I was curious whether that's true or false. I've been on statins for 5 years now following a heart problem. Mm-hmm. And really a bit discouraged by the lack of memory lately that I've been displaying.
Really? Let's try you. Who are the two hosts of this program?
Tom and Zorba.
Hey, there you go. See? not to worry.
Well, memory was always my strong point until about the last 2 years, and then I noticed a real drop-off in recall of details, and I tend to lay things down and misplace them, and that's just not like me. I was always an organizational fool and never had problems recalling things. Been a little disconcerting.
Well, let me ask you this, Zorba, what if I didn't first? How old are you?
I'm 54.
Oh. Well, Zorba, that's too early for memory loss.
Well, first of all, we have to talk about what really happens and what doesn't happen in terms of memory. There are certain kinds of memory that change with age. So, for instance, your ability to hold a string of numbers, you know, telephone numbers that are, you know, that are 9 digits or numbers that are 12 or 14 digits, decreases with age. And it's a phenomena that has been observed no matter what your ability for executive function, that's the ability to make a decision, take information. We know that ability changes. So your ability, for instance, to hold all the numbers in pi may be one thing at 18, you know, 3.1416. I know Tom was a big pi guy, right? He could took pi out to, what, was it 20 decimal points or something?
I can't
like
even
that?
Remember the third one.
It's 3.1416, 18. But anyway, pi, the ability to memorize certain numbers that geeks tend to do, and Tom, of course, was not your average geek. Actually, I don't think he was a geek at all. But anyway, decreases with age. So you might be able to hold, if you're really good, 10 or 20 digits in your brain. Well, you can't do it at the age of 50. You know, it decreases. So, for instance, I had no trouble memorizing telephone numbers, holding them in my head. Now I've got to write down the telephone number as soon as it comes in. And it changes around the age of, you notice it about the age of 50 or so. So that's one aspect that may not be related. But the study was a very, very poorly controlled, not a great study, showing the possibly statins affected memory. I don't think the study's
You don't buy that at all.
Well, I don't buy it. I don't think there's very much in it. Now, there's a very easy way to tell. Stop taking your statin for a month. You're not going to do yourself a lot of harm. It's a long-term drug. Have you had a heart attack?
Yes, 5 years ago.
5 years ago. So what I would do is I just stop for 2 to 4 weeks. You know, it's 5 years ago. And just see whether or not your memory gets better. Now, I do want to tell you something, though, about memory that I've noticed in my life that's very interesting. I have a couple of cars. Okay, so I've got a little Miata car that I take out in the summer, and it's got a regular key. It's 10 years old. And then I bought a new Honda CR-V that has a fancy electronic key. Okay, so I can identify it by pushing a button and it'll make a sound in a parking lot.
Yeah.
When I drive my Miata and I get out at a shopping center, I know exactly...
You push the key?
No, I can't look at the key. I'm not that dumb. I mean, I do look at the key. I mean, give me some credit. That's executive function. I'm holding the key trying to find the button. That would be a problem. Thank you very much.
Well, what happens in the parking
lot? I go in the parking lot. I always know where my car is. I'm very good at knowing where things are, spatially. I get out, I walk right to my car. Mm-hmm. I noticed that as soon as I bought my other car with the electronic key, I couldn't remember where it was in the parking lot. And what happens is I'd have to push a button and find out where the car is. Now, I have to tell you, this phenomena has not changed at all. When I drive one car in the summer, I know exactly where my car is. When I drive my other car in the winter, I don't know where my car is in the parking lot.
That's not a memory loss. That's, you know that you don't have to remember where your car is.
That's exactly it. So what happens is, in one case, I make some sort of a sub, you know, I make a subliminal memory of where it is. In the other case, I don't. So part of it is your ability to pay attention to what's going on. You follow me?
Yeah, I do.
So the two ways to test it are, number one, stop the statins for a week or a month and see whether or not your memory comes back. I'm going to guess that it's not going to make much change at all. And number two, if you keep on misplacing your keys and other things like that, you've got to develop some patterns to your life. And that's frankly why people have Post-it notes. That's why they sell so well.
Yes, I'm a big fan of Post-its lately.
Well, good luck with it.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
800-462-7413. Caller's waiting, but a line open for you if you'd like to join in. 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, before we get to our next caller, what's this all-you-can-eat at the stadium
business? Well, this is a great American idea. First of all, alcohol is out of it. If it was all you could drink at a stadium, they'd end up with a bunch of drunks at the end of the day. So that's not part of it. But these are baseball teams, Major League Baseball teams, about 30 of them, minor league baseball teams, basketball teams, not football teams yet, hockey teams, that are taking seats that are generally not used in the parts of the park that are not being used. They ramp up the price, and they say you can – all the popcorn, you can have all the hot dogs, you can have all the chips, you can have all the soda you want to drink. So that basically, when you look at people, you're encouraging them to have a couple of thousand extra calories at the game.
Yeah, so you pay more for your ticket to get in, but the
deal is
you get as many hot dogs.
And what happens, of course, in the all-you-can-eat places is people logically say, wait a minute, I paid for this, I'm going to have an extra hot dog.
Yeah.
And I spoke to a guy, this was a patient of mine, who clocks in at about 325 pounds in my office, and he went to one of these things. He went to one of these things during the summer at a Mallards game, and I said, "What did you eat?" And he said, "Well, that doesn't count. You know, we're talking about weight loss." And I said, "What did you eat at the game?" And he said, "Well, that doesn't count, Doc. It's an all-you-can-eat seat." That's when I first learned about it. And I said, "Well, tell me what you ate." He said, "Well, I had 6 brats, 5 bags of chips, and a couple of big 64 ounces of Coke." I said, "Diet?" He said, no, regular Coke. So he had 124 ounces of Cokes.
Yeah.
He had 6 brats, and he had a bunch of chips. I calculated out that he had 2,500 calories at that game.
Yeah.
And what happens is this starts to encourage bad eating. Now, I don't think there should be laws with this. I just think that this is really a good example of dumb, stupid stuff that goes on in our country.
Well, this is no different, though, Zorba, than a buffet.
What's so different? It's no different than a buffet. You mean when you go to an all-you-can-eat buffet?
Yeah.
No, it's no different than an all-you-can-eat buffet where people pay a certain amount of money.
Yeah.
Except the food in a buffet, at least you have some healthy food. I mean, you're talking about chips. Now, chips are not your healthiest food, right?
Yeah.
You're talking about buttered popcorn. Not exactly the healthiest food.
They don't tend to have salads.
You're talking about high fructose drinks, high fat food. And so I think one of the issues, if you're trying to maintain your weight, if you're trying to lose weight, if you're trying to be healthy, you got to avoid these seats. Because what will happen is it's party time. You look at your neighbor next to you. They've discovered at buffets, if the person in the seat next to you goes back and gets more food at a buffet, you're going to go back and get more food. It's a competition.
Yeah.
I'm not going to let them eat more than I did because we paid the same amount.
Yeah. As you know, I'm not the healthiest eater around. I'm sort of, I eat bad stuff a lot, but I don't eat a lot of that bad stuff, which is why I stay away from buffets, because I always think I get cheated You pay a certain price, if you don't eat a lot of food, you're overpaying.
I
wouldn't go to these seats at the ball game. I don't want.
And you know, they're not going to market it to you, but they're going to market it to people who are more likely to go. Yeah. Hey, it's party time. We get to eat. We get to have a lot of food. It's just another example of don't put yourself in that environment, and then you're less likely to eat those extra calories.
I don't think. Are the seats farther apart in those sections at the
double wide. They're the double wide.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. That's 800-462-7413. We're with a listener now, Zorba, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hello.
Hello.
What's up?
Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, my daughter had a stress fracture on her right foot about a month ago. It started on her toe. A few days later, moved all the way up the foot. We took her to the doctor. She put her on some anti-inflammatories that really didn't seem to work. And then took a bone scan, found out it was a stress fracture, and only gave her a little boot to wear for about 3 weeks and take some Tylenol. Well, she's 18 years old. She's in school until just now, the Easter break. But she's always standing or walking, and it's slowly going away. But every so often, she can be doing nothing, and she'll get a shooting pain in her foot that can last from 5 minutes to an hour or so. And I was wondering, is there anything else she can do, any do's and don'ts, or how long something like this will take to heal?
Well, there definitely are some do's and don'ts. First of all, you've made an interesting comment. When your daughter is on spring break, she wears her boot. When your daughter is in school, she's not going to wear her boot?
She's going to wear it then also.
Okay, because that's important, because 18-year-old girls, 17-year-old girls, 12-year-old girls, if something looks dorky and stupid and dumb, they may not wear it. And so you really have to query her, because she may wear it out of the house and not wear it when she's in school. I mean, I just mention it because I have 4 children, and I do know that sometimes they didn't tell me everything they were doing in their life. And so she may not be telling you. The thing about the boot is, it just is a hard sole to basically protect the bone while it's healing. And the problem is, if it doesn't work, basically you either take Tylenol or you take ibuprofen.
Right.
You know, 3 tablets of ibuprofen twice a day, or 2 tablets of over-the-counter naproxen. Aleve is the most common name brand. Twice a day will work.
How long did you say she's been wearing it now?
She's only had it for about a week now, and she wears it during the day and takes it off at night.
Right, when she goes to sleep. And what happens is, it's a break, and it takes 6 to 8 weeks to heal. And, of course, you're walking on it, and if it's too painful, sometimes you actually have to go on crutches and stay off the foot. But that's what you do. It's basically a break that was not picked up on the normal X-ray, but it could be picked up on a scan because it showed that there was some bone healing involved.
So 6 to 8 weeks is the answer to how long will this take?
Yeah, it takes a long time. It takes 6 to 8 weeks. Some kids are better, and adults are better in about 3 weeks. How long was she in pain before she had the boot on?
About a week.
So she's about a week into the healing process. You know, it's really from the time that she actually did it. What did she do? Is she in band or anything like that?
No. She was just dancing around the house. She noticed her, she's not into athletics. She just noticed her toe hurt, complained about it a little bit, and then all of a sudden,
was she doing a pirouette and jumping
possibly,
or anything like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, just adding extra weight to it.
How will she know, Zorba, when it's okay to take the thing off and
the pain stops. That's basically it.
So when the pain is gone, you can lose the boot.
Pain is the guide.
Okay.
Pain is the guide.
Okay, so the Tylenol is okay. What else did you say? Ibuprofen?
Ibuprofen, 3 tablets 3 times a day, or Aleve, 2 tablets twice daily. I think that works better. I like Aleve because it's a twice-a-day pill. The generic is, you know, that's what I buy, generic Aleve, and it works really well. 2 tablets in the morning, 2 tablets in the evening. Does a great job.
Okay, Aleve. Thanks so much, Dr. Shu. Appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much for the call at 1-800-462-7413. To a listener now, Zorba, in Lounsboro, Alabama. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, I have an 8-year-old girl, and we've been struggling for, I would say, probably 5-6 years now with achy legs. And some symptoms with the legs are numbness when she walks, gets really tired, really easy. Legs are kind of puffy, occasionally change colors, and just lots of pain when she's on them a lot.
Hmm. How old is your daughter?
She's 8.
8 years old, and how long did you say this has been going on?
We've been struggling. struggling with this for probably 5 or 6 years. And we've been to doctors, and they can't seem to give us anything.
So she has numbness in her legs? You know, she says...
Yeah, it's more... The numbness kind of... It's almost like they go to sleep, but that's more when she sits. But they'll go to sleep too often, in my opinion.
When you say your feet go to sleep, what happens is you sit on your feet and you stop the circulation. That's what a foot going to sleep is. You mean she gets up and she says, my feet are asleep all the time? And
yeah, and it's in her legs, too. And it's only from about the knee down.
Uh-huh. So you've gone... What kind of doctors have you gone to?
Well, we've gone to... Well, of course, just her pediatric doctor, and we've been to him like 2 or 3 times with the same problem, and he just kind of dumbfounded.
Uh-huh. And did she go to any other doctors at all?
No, we're actually starting the process. We are actually have an appointment with a new pediatrician to get in to see him.
Yeah, I'll tell you, what I would recommend is you see a neurologist. If she has numbness and it's unsolved, she needs a neurological examination. Now, your new pediatrician or family doctor may be able to give you, you know, some ideas of what there is, but I think a child that young who's got numbness, she needs a neurological examination to figure out what's going on. I mean, that's unusual. And first of all, numbness sometimes is very difficult, but a good neurological examination will show whether she has any sensory deficit.
Okay.
That's the issue. Is there real, I mean, there's the perception of numbness, and then there's the inability to feel something when it's on your foot. For instance, diabetics may feel numbness on their foot. That's one way. But when they have a sensory deficit, that's something completely different. So I think it's important that you have a full examination to discover precisely what's going on. That's my recommendation.
Great. Yeah, every step helps.
Yeah, every step does help.
That's
when
right.
You're trying to figure out something for your kids. So
okay,
good
well,
luck.
We will definitely make an appointment with that.
Okay. Thanks so much for calling us first.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Zorba, let's take a minute here to help out Ned, who sent a note to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. He writes, is there any treatment available to get rid of too much body hair? I have it everywhere. I swim frequently at the YMCA, and it's sort of embarrassing. Even my family comments on it. I've tried the traditional shaving and waxing, but it returns just the same. And then there is electrical treatment, but I give blood every 56 days and don't want to stop that. Maybe if I had less, I would swim faster.
Yeah, right. I don't think you would necessarily swim faster unless you're an Olympic swimmer and you could
shave.
They
always shave their bodies. Yeah,
but they're Olympic swimmers. I mean, it's
Ned swimmers?
I doubt it. They're trying to shave off a hundredth of a second. That's kind of a little bit different. Some guys are born with more hair than other guys. That's basically it, either on their head or on their whole body. And the problematic issue is that if you have a lot of hair and you don't want to have a lot of hair and it changes your body image, then you have to go through the cosmetic issues of waxing, electrolysis to get rid of some hair, shaving. And if that doesn't work, you have to figure out some way to actually live with your body in that way. And that's kind of it. Some guys just have more than others.
So he's done everything he can do. Yeah.
He has done everything that he can do. There is no pill to get rid of hair. And if you look at men's magazines and you look at hair removal, you can see there are lots of ads in men's magazines. So men's want to have less hair. And it was fascinating. I was looking at a James Bond movie the other night that was up on the TV.
Yep.
I was looking at it, and I was looking at the first James Bond guy, and he was courting a girl.
Sean Connery.
And he was covered with hair, totally covered with hair. And so I looked and I said, it was very interesting because back in the 60s, in the early 70s, that was considered to be de rigueur, covered with hair. And now you
really
tend to have...
Really manly.
It was really manly, and now it's considered, because of society tastes, in a movie set now, he probably would have all of his hair shaved off. That's probably the way the situation would be. Nonetheless, got to live with it, or you got to treat it with the cosmetic ways. No magic.
Just keep your clothes on. Don't go swimming.
There you go. That's right. Don't go swimming.
We want to hear from you. Send us your questions, comments, and tips in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Stick with us. We have a yummy recipe coming up. More of your calls, too. Don't forget our medical myth buster later on. Some more interesting research. All sorts of great reasons to stay with us here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. If you have a question for Zorba, well, all you have to do is call 800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. Back to the phones in just a bit, Zorba, after our recipe. And for that, we welcome Pewaukee, Wisconsin listener Tom Taft. Tom, hi.
Hi. How are you, Tom?
Fine. Good to have you here, and thanks so much for submitting your recipe for citrus chicken with spinach. First question, how come you didn't name it Tom's Citrus Chicken with Spinach?
Oh, I figured it would be too self-serving. So.
Well, a very modest guy, Tom, is. How'd you come up with the recipe?
Well, actually, this actually is an outgrowth of a recipe I made for us down in Mexico when we were there last spring. And I had some fish that I wanted to put something with, and I did some work with cilantro, and at that time I actually included tomatoes, but I used the orange juice and the lime juice, and it turned out to be a great sauce for the fish. So when I got thinking about something this spring, I decided to do it a little bit differently, but to use the orange juice and the lime juice, and it's really worked out really well.
Yeah, it really looks good, just looking over the ingredients. Now, you're a better cook than your wife is?
No, I'm not a better cook than she is. I'm the chef, and she's the cook. She follows recipes I create. So.
I got it.
Tom, we're going to run through the ingredients here, and as we do, you feel free to chime in, okay?
Okay, will do.
Yeah, this looks like an absolutely great recipe. How long have you been doing this for? How many years, this particular recipe?
Actually, this is a new recipe made just recently. My wife is pushing me to be a more heart-healthy eater, and we're avid listeners to you guys on a regular
basis. Thank you. And I have to tell you, we've made major strides. When you look now, there was a recent article and research that came out of the Census Department that showed that the increase in age among people who educate themselves has actually dramatically, the spread has increased over the last 5 years. So in other words, people who read, who listen, who talk, and make changes in their life are actually living longer, and are living longer and healthier lives. So the fact that your wife says, "Hey, honey, let's eat in a more heart healthy way," really does pay dividends.
Yeah, and when she says that to you, what do you say, Tom?
Well, I tell her as long as it isn't tofu. and I are right on target, Tom.
Toms know what they're talking about.
That's right. Toms, don't try serving tofu to Toms, because you'll get it back. You'll get it back. Okay, start out with 2 tablespoonfuls of olive oil.
Big tea olive oil.
Yeah, great oil to use. I use extra virgin olive oil because it tastes great.
Right.
10 ounces of chicken breast, boneless, skinless, cut into small chunks.
Mm-hmm. 10 ounces chicken breast, boneless, skinless, cut in small chunks.
Okay, tablespoonful of fresh ginger.
Big tea fresh ginger.
Now, when you take your ginger, do you put it in the freezer or do you put it in the refrigerator?
Actually, I keep mine in the refrigerator usually. I haven't tried the freezer.
Well, the freezer, just as a tip, you can take ginger, you freeze it, and then it is easy to grate. Grate because it comes off, it grates just beautifully, and you put it in the freezer. I know that's where Tom puts his ginger.
Always in the freezer.
Two scallions chopped. Juice of one medium orange. What's a medium orange?
kind of a medium orange. I'd say it's maybe third of a cup or maybe, something of that nature.
It gives an idea of what that is.
But you always do it right from the orange. You don't buy the juice and then just pour a third of a cup.
No, I use it straight from the orange.
Yeah, and it will taste better because, when you open it up, it tastes better.
Yeah.
Juice of a quarter of a large lime. Same thing. You're not going to use reconstituted lime juice.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So juice of a quarter of a large lime. 3 stalks of bok choy, coarsely chopped.
What's bok choy?
Okay, it's kind of like a celery cabbage. It's a Chinese vegetable, and it's got a thick white stem and then green leaves at the top. And it's a little bit like celery, but it's not like celery. It's unique to itself. It's a little bit like cabbage, but not really like cabbage. So It's a unique vegetable.
Right, it's great. You can get them now. You can get, I've used bok choy for years. For many years, you could only get it at an Asian grocery store, but you can get bok choy at good, large grocery stores now.
What of the Asian dishes has bok choy in?
It's used in a lot of stir fries. But it has a different taste. You know, a celery is pretty tasteless, and bok choy has more taste. It has a fuller, more robust taste than celery.
Yeah, I wouldn't substitute celery in this recipe.
No, it wouldn't work. And I wouldn't use Chinese cabbage either because it won't have the same.
Three stalks of bok choy.
10 ounces of fresh spinach leaves.
10 ounces fresh spinach leaves.
And then you've got cilantro for those of us who like cilantro. 3 tablespoonfuls of cilantro.
3 big tea of cilantro.
Yeah, it's interesting how there's cilantro lovers and cilantro haters. You know, you don't hear about that with parsley, right? You know,
I think you do, actually.
With parsley?
Yeah.
Well, maybe for you.
Well,
what
do you mean?
About lettuce.
Are you a hater or a lover?
I've been like cilantro, but it adds
parsley, I'm talking about.
I like parsley.
I do, too. And I think some people, most people throw it away when it comes. Anyway, okay, this is...
But that's the issue with cilantro. I think it's kind of like licorice, too. It's a very, it's an aromatic smell.
Yeah, 3 big tea of that.
Salt and pepper. Right. Okay.
S&P.
Heat the olive oil over medium heat, medium to high heat in a large skillet. Sauté the chicken, ginger, and scallions for about 2 minutes, turning frequently so it's, you know, all browned on each side. Then add the lime juice and the juice from 1/2 of the orange. Sauté another minute. At the bok choy and continue for a minute or two because the bok choy has to be cooked much less than the chicken. Then add the spinach because that's cooked essentially the least.
Right.
And the juice from the remaining half of the orange, cook for an additional minute and then add the cilantro if you wish, saute for another minute and wonderful over rice or angel hair pasta or maybe sprinkle on some rice noodles. I think this
sounds
delicious.
Great. Now, this sounds like a kind of a quick and easy one, too, Tom.
Yes, it actually, I think it can be done pretty much even with preparation in about 15 minutes. It's a very simple recipe and a very tasty one. So the key is to spoon some of the sauce onto it, you know, because you will have sauce in the pan because of the juices. And the ginger penetrates that, and if you spoon that over it, it really adds to the overall flavor. So.
It's delish. Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
And for sending us his winning recipe, Tom gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low-Fat, Guilt-Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's easy. Just email your original low-fat recipe to us at
zorba@wpr.org.
For today's recipe, send a stamped self-addressed business-sized envelope to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, zip 53706.
And if you want this recipe to go, just go to our website. You can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor on Your Health recipes. That's zorbapastor.org.
is our toll-free number. And Zorba, our next caller is in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, guys. How are you?
We're fine. How can we help you?
Well, first of all, I just want to say I love your show. I listen to it all the time.
Aren't you nice?
I learn so much, and I laugh so hard while I'm learning. What's better than that?
You laugh at us?
I laugh with you.
You laugh at Zorba? And
I laugh
with us.
I can't believe that.
Laughing at a doctor. I didn't think that was allowed.
All right. Here is my dilemma.
Yeah.
I purchased a set of very expensive, very heavy, hard, anodized aluminum cookware for my daughter. I've been giving her one piece at a time for presents. Now I started reading articles that these might be causing health problems, that they could be toxic for your health. They have carcinogens in them, and in the fumes, and now I'm confused, and I don't know if I should stop giving these to her. I don't know if her birthday's coming up in April. Do I give her another piece, or do I start saving for stainless steel?
Uh-huh. I've got a question for you, by the way. Did you buy the cookware all at one time, and you're just sort of parceling it out?
Yes, I bought 12 pieces in a huge set.
Well, let's talk about aluminum. The issue with aluminum really has to do, first of all, aluminum is the most common metal on Earth. Aluminum is present in things that we drink and eat, such as Maalox. Maalox has aluminum in it. It has an aluminum compound. And so a theory came out about 15, 20 years ago that aluminum caused Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
It was a big issue. And so the FDA and the NIH and the CDC got together and said, well, guys, we got to look at this because aluminum cookware is the most common cookware because
right.
it's lighter weight than steel. I mean, steel cookware is heavier. Cast iron cookware is fine, but it has its own issues in there. And so, you know, what are we going to do? And what they discovered when they did the research was that aluminum does not cause Alzheimer's. I think it's been proven that it does not have carcinogens. It doesn't cause Alzheimer's. It is safe.
But this is Teflon now.
Right.
Now, let me go to the Teflon issue.
Yeah.
So you've got aluminum cookware, then you have but that's one issue that's there. Now you have Teflon covering, and Teflon, ever since it first came out, also came out with the side effect that Teflon is bad for us. It's, you know, it's artificial, as if metal were not artificial, and that if we heat it high enough, it'll cause cancer. And there's no evidence for that at all. None whatsoever.
Good.
Now, if you heat it super hot, you know, it does tend to, it'll have a smell to it, and you can ruin the Teflon if you put it in an oven at 550 degrees and leave it there, I think, for 2 or 3 hours, you can ruin the Teflon. But there's no evidence if this cookware is actually causing problems. For instance, if you look at the Romans died because they think that the Romans actually had problems. They know because of lead poisoning or copper poisoning because they drank out of those vessels. So this is an ancient question of what's safe cookware. I think it's just fine. The question is, why don't you give your daughter all the pieces at one time? Why are you parceling them out? I mean, that's the question I have. I mean, come on, you're the mom. Give her one big gift. I mean, what's this one at a time
this
business?
Is coming from Zorba Pastor,
I mean,
Mr. Frugal?
I am not frugal. I am thrifty. I am not frugal.
It used to be, I'm not cheap,
thrifty.
I'm frugal. Now it's I'm not frugal.
Frugal is a bad word. Thrifty is okay. I mean, what's this one at a time business with your daughter? I mean, well, she's a good woman. I mean, give it to her all at one time.
I know. I thought it'd be fun. She never knows when to expect a piece, and so she does get all.
I mean, are you going to do this over a period of years?
It's all done in one year.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah. But she sees the present. It's wrapped, and she says, I wonder what this is.
She is using a set of cookware, so she doesn't have to go hungry.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. Anyway, I think it's safe. I think it's safe.
Oh, wonderful. Now I don't have to go out and buy a whole new set of stainless.
There you go.
Thanks a lot for the call. Bye-bye.
Bye.
800-462-7413. To a listener now, Zorba, in Leo, Indiana. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
Well, first off, thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I drive through Wisconsin going back and forth and listen to your show whenever I come through, and I really enjoy it. I'm confused.
Mm-hmm.
You hear so much about carbs. Carbs are bad, carbs are good. Types of carbs. I was introduced to the glycemic index a few years ago, and I guess my question is, should you look at the glycemic index and factor that when you look at the source of your carbs? I try and stay up on diets. I'm in my mid-50s, and I feel like that melting snowman. I'm kind of getting that that look, so I'm some direction on carbs. Carbs in general, is the glycemic index something you really should look at, should watch, and should you watch carbs after, you know, say 6 o'clock at night?
Sure. Well, first of all, most people overeat between 5 and 10 o'clock at night. So
mm-hmm.
there's nothing magic about 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening. It's that we eat a lot.
Mm-hmm.
40 to 50% or more of our calories will come. We're sitting there and, you know, all you have to do is watch television and, you know, the commercials, and they're boring, and people get up and they go and get food.
And they show you food at that time,
yeah,
too.
So it's not that eating late at night puts on weight.
Yeah.
It's that eating puts on weight no matter when you do if you overeat. And most people overeat not when they're working. They usually overeat when they're at home. So.
Mm-hmm.
And when we look at the glycemic index, we look at the fact that when we eat lots of refined carbohydrates, high fructose corn syrup being the perfect example of a refined carbohydrate, that we squirt out a lot of insulin to get that sugar that we're eating from our bloodstream into our cells. Well, there are questions whether or not, A, it's addictive, B, is that what is essentially causing a diabetes within our society? And that's I think, a big question. But finally, do we need all those refined carbohydrates? And the answer is, we don't. You know, complex carbohydrates are better. A potato is better for us than a pastry. I mean, that's ultimately what it is. So mm-hmm. should you watch your carbs? Yes. Should you watch your refined carbs? Yes. Is there such a thing as a bad calorie? Yes, because there can be too many calories. Now, if you're starving and you're eating 1,600 calories a day or 1,800 calories a day, it doesn't mean as much as if you're eating 3,000 calories a day.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So how's your weight? What's your height? What's your weight?
I've been blessed. I've always been fairly slender. In fact, really, I've been lifting weights, anaerobic exercises for about 8 or 9 years to put on some muscle. So I'm trying to eat as much lean protein as I can.
Yeah, that's it. You know, if you don't have a weight problem, you're obviously eating, you're not eating too many refined carbohydrates, first of all. You know, unless you have a lousy diet and all your calories are coming from carbs, and if you're eating lean proteins, it's not the way it is. So my recommendation is, yes, avoid high glycemic index carbs, the perfect example being sugary sweet pastries.
Okay.
Sugary sweet pastries. Have those as a treat. Do not have them on a regular basis.
I do love my little piece of chocolate now and then.
Chocolate is great. Chocolate is great. And I have to admit, on Sunday, I do get a donut. I love my donut.
You have to now and then. Otherwise,
absolutely.
You know,
hey, what is life about without having those? But it's that when you have things like that every single day that I think is the big issue.
Okay. All right. Great. Well, thanks so much.
Sure,
thank
appreciate
you.
The call. Thank you very much. 800-462-7413. We have some more research coming up. Our medical myth buster as well, having to do with drinking alcohol, and more of your calls too. Here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again, and there is a line open for you now, 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, some research suggesting that seasonal allergies could spark depression and fatigue.
That's right. First of all, seasonal allergies affect lots and lots of Americans. And it's one of those things that you can get as a child and can last a lifetime. Although as you tend to get older, your allergies tend to get better. That's been the case in my case. My allergies are less. We've got great new medications on the market over the last few years. They don't make you sleepy. The old medicines like Benadryl put you out. The new medications do not. We have nasal sprays that also work, and then there's something called a leukotriene inhibitor called Singulair, very expensive, but works in some people with really, allergies that are just not getting better. But there's some other issues that are now seeming to come forth. It's not just the itchy eyes and runny nose, but it may trigger depression in some people.
Yeah. Well, tell us about it.
Well, the study looked at depression, looked at something called cytokines that are basically released in the brain when we have allergies. And a study in the Journal of Psychosomatic Medicine followed ragweed patients for a year and found that during allergy season, when the pollen counts went up, they tend to get depressed. And when the pollen counts went down, they tended not to get depressed. Now, it's very hard to separate this out because, obviously, you've got the symptoms of allergies.
Yeah. Well, here, excuse my skepticism on this, but if something is wrong with me, I'm going to tend not to feel very well. I mean, I'm going to be a little depressed, whether it's allergies or a sore elbow you're less likely to be chipper, happy.
Right. Yeah. But the other issue is that if you have a tendency towards depression or something called dysthymia is sort of depression light, you're not quite depressed, but you've got that, it may flip you into depression, and that really is I think is the problematic issue.
Do you think treating the allergies would tend to also do away with the depression?
Well, it's kind of interesting.
Symptoms?
First of all, I think one of the issues are a lot of people are suboptimally treated for their allergies. They don't realize that during the height of the season, they need drops for their eyes, a spray for their nose, and then the pill. you know, something like over-the-counter Claritin. And they need all three maybe for a week or two, and then they can get by with the nasal spray, steroid spray that works really well, or the eye drops. And then for other people, it may be the wrong pills. In other words, one pill may work for you and the other allergy pill may not work for you. So I think what you need is total treatment of your allergies the right way, and you need a doc to work with you if you're not treated. Then for other people, you have to realize, hey, maybe depression is being triggered. Maybe I need help for depression. Maybe it's not just an allergy time. Maybe the depression is throwing me in. And for those people, they may want to discuss it with their physician because they may also want an antidepressant.
Enough on depression. Let's get to the phones. 800-462-7413. Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, I have two children, and with my first pregnancy, I was told that I had something called a diastasis. And with my second pregnancy, it got a whole lot worse. So I'm wondering if there's anything I can do besides surgery to fix it, because it's very pronounced and it's really unattractive.
Yeah. What's diastasis?
Well, diastasis recti is where you've got the rectus sheath. When you've got, let's say you're a young guy with a six-pack, you're looking at the rectus muscles. You're looking at the abdominal muscles with the sheath on it, and they kind of, you know, they insert right down the midline of our tummy, and when you're pregnant sometimes, and other places, they pull apart. So, you know, instead of having one, if you were a guy, obviously you're not, you're pregnant, but,
no.
but just to show people what they're looking at, it's, you know, it's there, and when it pulls apart, it has a bulge. Do you notice that you've got sort of two, you know, lumpy bulges in your belly?
Oh, yeah. It looks like I have a butt belly. It's horrible.
Right. It looks like you have a butt belly because on the because on that. You know, sometimes these can be fixed. First of all, it does get, once it happens, it happens. You've got a tear there. And
okay.
Basically, that tear is never going to heal. That's the problem. And it's not going to heal without some cosmetic surgery. And sometimes that surgery works or not. It's usually not covered by insurance, and it costs bucks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Did you find out how much it costs?
No, I don't remember the exact figure. I know with my second, I had a section, and so he was saying that if he could fix it, he would.
Mm-hmm.
But it was up so high that he couldn't do it.
He couldn't do it because he would have to dissect up higher in order to be able to do that.
Yeah, he said he kept me stem to sternum, and I said, no.
No, that's exactly it. That's exactly what it is. He has to cut you, so you would then have a midline scar. And then, of course, once again, there are the issues. It's a cosmetic surgery, so it's not covered by insurance. So. The answer is it's a problem, and so it's a cosmetic problem, and there's no treatment of this short of surgery.
Well, what about exercise to get
not
rid
do
of
it.
Tummy fat?
Well, it may get rid of some tummy fat, but you'll still have these two, instead of having one tummy, you've got two tummies on each side. That's what happens.
Yeah,
you know,
and
from
it's
that middle.
Really, you know, it's hard to wear clothing that. You know, you want to hide it.
Right.
Because it's not pretty at all.
Right. That's exactly what it is. You know, if you do exercises, you, of course, will build up that muscle. And if you lose weight, of course, it'll be thinner. But you'll never get rid of that architectural abnormality from this.
Okay.
But,
so I will always have it.
You will always have it.
But the rest of you is beautiful.
Well, thank you.
Yes.
That's what my son tells me.
Thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you. You have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
800-462-7413. Zorba, let's take a couple of minutes now for our medical myth buster. We have a listener myth today from Steve in Western Colorado. Steve writes, is it true or is it a myth that people get drunker faster at higher altitudes? I now live in Colorado, about 6,500 feet high. When I visit friends in the Midwest, it seems to take longer even to get buzzed. But this could be a placebo effect.
The answer is that is a total myth, that when you're in the mountains that you actually get drunker on booze or on beer. And the myth that I've heard, I go to Colorado every year to ski, is that, you know, two drinks in Colorado are equal to four drinks in the Midwest. And the answer is absolutely not. And it's really a myth that comes from 50 years ago when a number of researchers from Columbia University went up and did old-fashioned breathalyzer-type tests, and basically at 12 12,000 feet and 15,000 feet discovered that supposedly there was a higher concentration of alcohol in your body when you drank a beer or two and than when you were lower. But this has now been totally dispelled. The FAA looked at it to determine whether or not there was a difference, for instance, for people on airplanes, off of airplanes, and the answer is no. A can of beer is a can of beer is a can of beer, and a shot is a shot is a shot.
But at high altitudes, you do get tired faster.
Oh, well, you may get tired
faster. So if you're drinking, you could sort of feel the effects of alcohol.
Well, at high altitudes, you get tired faster if you're not altitude adjusted. I mean, for the people who live in Denver, the Mile High City, they adjust to that. So they don't get tired any faster than you and I. Mm-hmm. We may have a little, we may have mountain sickness when we go to Denver. And so it takes us a week or two to fully adjust. But for the people there, they're adjusted. So they don't get tired quicker.
Okay. No, okay.
It's a myth. Throw it out. Just like, there it is. We'll take it. One myth gone.
Sorry that we crumpled you up and threw you away there, Steve. Want to hear Zorba bust your myth? Just send it along in an email to
Zorba at WPR.org.
800-462-7413, toll free. And a listener now in Boise, Idaho. Hi.
Hi, guys.
What's up?
Well, I've had a problem now for over 7 years. It's just been a headache that's been constant without a break. And I've been to lots of doctors and haven't been able to figure out what's wrong yet.
Oh, my goodness. You've had a headache for 7 years?
That's a long time.
Yeah, it's just one headache. It hasn't been headaches, but just one that hasn't ever gone away.
Is it? It must be a dull kind. It isn't a splitting headache or you'd drive you out of your mind.
No, it's a low-level tension headache, but it does fluctuate in intensity throughout the day. And I noticed that if I'm not getting much sleep, it tends to get a lot worse.
Mm-hmm. How many doctors have you gone to?
It started when I was in Australia, so I visited 3 or 4 different doctors there, just the general doctor, a neurologist, and they did MRIs and CAT scans and couldn't find anything. And then back here in the States, I've been to see every doctor I could here locally. But
mm-hmm. Now, have you gone to alternative healers also? Have you tried yoga, acupuncture, different herbs and minerals, nutraceuticals?
I have. I actually went and spent 6 months in Korea trying acupuncture and Eastern medicine over there.
Now, wait a second. You went to Korea to cure your headache?
That was part of the reason I went. Mm-hmm. I have roots there. My mother's side is from Korea, so uh-huh. It was also just a trip to go experience the culture there.
The culture of Korea. First of all, you have chronic daily headaches. That's sort of it's the garbage can turn for this type of a problem. I would recommend that you go to a university and you go to a university neurological service and you present with all of your information and you get it discussed. And the reason is you'll have a bunch of medical students, you'll have interns, you'll have residents. It'll go into a discussion of what do we do with somebody with chronic daily headaches and how do we treat it. So you'll get the best Western viewpoint that you can have. But the second viewpoint, because I don't think they're going to cure this. I don't think they're going to cure it. They may give you an answer, which is chronic daily headaches, A, B, we don't know what they're from. Mm-hmm. But whatever that is, sometimes that's reassuring. The next step is, okay, I've got it. What do I do to minimize it? I can't get rid of it. Just like if you lost your leg, you couldn't have another leg. Just like if you lost a finger, you couldn't get a finger back. You've got a disability, if you will, a neurological disability that you have to deal with it. What can you do to basically keep it under control? And I think that's the second issue that you want to get out of a university environment. The second environment that I would look at would be in terms of meditation. Yoga or meditation, some sort of a meditative practice that would be a tradition that you would find useful to you. And the reason is it's quite often that through meditative practices and yoga, we can find a way of coming to peace with our pain and living with the pain that is there. And we, you know, psychological pain and physical pain, and sometimes that's the way. So I would look at that both from a Western and, if you will, from an Eastern point of view.
Well, great. I appreciate the advice.
Yeah, good luck.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Before I let you off the hook for the week, Zorba, let's take a moment to help out a listener named Kate. Kate sent a note to our inbox about etiquette in your local doc's office. She writes, Now that we are able to do research on the web from reputable sites about our health problems, I'm finding that if I show up at my doctor's office armed with information, I'm being met with a lot of negativity. It's almost as if he thinks I'm questioning his expertise, which is far from the truth. How can I present my questions to my doctor without him feeling as if I'm testing him or questioning his knowledge?
Well, first of all, you are testing him and you are questioning his knowledge. And second of all, there's nothing wrong with that. This may be the wrong doctor for you. But let me tell you the logistical problem. If somebody comes into my office and they've got a 15-minute appointment and they come in with a list, 10 long, I can't handle that in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So part of the issue is making the appointment that for an appropriate amount of time or having to come back. I mean, if it's 15 minutes and I've got 30 minutes of work, I can't do it in 15 minutes. It doesn't work. So if you bring in a list of questions about a specific pattern or problem, no, you're not going to get to that whole list. You might get to number one, number two, or number three. But if you're questioning your doctor because you have information from the web and mm-hmm. your doctor doesn't like the fact that you have some information, well, that's the wrong doctor. You know, you want your doctor to be your advocate, but your doctor is not responsible. And if the doctor is questioning whether or not you have the right information, well, you know, that's why you're coming to your doctor. You want their mentoring, you want their expertise, but you don't want to follow it just sort of blindly. You want their expertise and you want them to advocate for you, but you want to be the informed consumer because that, frankly, is the best patient.
It does sound as though maybe you should look at another doctor, don't you think?
I think so.
Yeah.
It may be time.
Your questions won't be met with any negativity when you send them here, at least not by Zorba. So keep them coming. Just send them in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Zorba, we will see you next week.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can bug our producer anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director. Charles Monroe Kane is our executive producer. And Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0405Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.